Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Hogcast Episode 2. Just a quick disclaimer, this podcast does contain explicit content. Anything said or done on this podcast does not reflect any agency or entity, either public or private, and any statements or comments made on this podcast should not be perceived or used as either legal, professional, or medical advice. I am Jake. With me, I'm joined by Denny. Denny, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you doing?
Wonderful.
Good.
So, got a few topics to discuss here. I figured we'd get right into it. Essentially, we're going to be talking about community policing and how times have changed, and community policing means different things. The first thing that we're going to bring up, I believe the New York Police Department has a, it's not necessarily new, but it has been brought to light by the media here recently, a dance team done by the New York Police Department. Denny, have you heard anything about this?
I have not. Not a big dancer, believe it or not.
You're not a big dancer?
No.
I mean, in terms of community policing, if it made public relations better and stuff, I'd get on stage and do the truffle shuffle. But other than that, I'm not a big dancer either. So the New York City Police Department has a dance team, and I believe that they do dances at different events. I think that they try to win trophies or medals and try to place, in these dance competitions. Denny, what's your opinion on this?
Well, you could look at it from having like a kickball league or a softball league, just a way for your partners to get together after shift and do something together. Dancing, like I said, not really my forte there. But you know, it brings the communities together, and if that's what they like to do, then that's what they like to do.
Yeah, so I think the purpose behind this dance team is more for employees of the police department to get together, dance, kind of as a team-building exercise. And they do compete in competitions across the nation. It is a community policing sort of thing, I guess you could say. You just pulled up a news article here. You want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, so looking at the posting they have here, it says, apparently the internet is up in arms over this dance team. You know, it looks like from the first picture, for the first glance, looks like an all-female dance team.
Where are the males at? I mean,
Yeah, I don't see any males on the dance team. Looks like it was formed back in 2022, so it's been a while now. It is a volunteer club. It's all members of the New York Police Department. So they're also allowing civilian members of the service to join. So apparently the group's president is allowing that. And so I'm guessing they're talking more about, you got any admin workers, any front desk workers that want to come join the dance team.
So referencing community policing or 21st century style policing, me personally, I think if you have this big of a department where there's this many dancers on it, go for it. Obviously, it's like you said, it's similar to a softball or kickball type of a league. I would say it's probably a good thing. With a department this big, I think that implementing this in a smaller department would kind of be perceived as a joke. I noticed that some, just reading the article here, some members of the community are upset by it, due to, I guess, just it being a dance team for a police department.
It looks like there's, so a few of our higher celebrities, I guess we won't name them here, they voiced concern saying that it could be taking resources away from crime prevention. But, you know, from the looks of things, it looks like it's some law enforcement, some office workers, just anyone who works for the police department, at the same time, it looks like the dance team, the president kind of spoke back saying that they're not doing this well on duty. You know, there's what you do outside of your work that you use to unwind and take some of the stress off, and they're not practicing well on duty. So any of these officers or front desk workers or records workers, whoever they are, whatever their job is, when they're at work, they're doing their job, and this is a way for them to relieve some of their stress, at the same time connect with the community in certain aspects. You know, it's not a sport, but a lot of people are out there dancing. They're part of this team, and you know, it's like when you see the Navy football team or the Army football team. They're out there, they're playing a sport, they're connecting with the community in this game that kind of shows, hey, you know, they can take a break away and find these ways to relieve their stress.
Yeah, and speaking of those critics, if you'll scroll up on the article here that our listeners can't see, it says some of the critics are, quote, high-profile figures, unquote, Joe Rogan and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. They're the ones that voice concerns that the team might be diverting essential resources away from crime prevention and public safety in the city, grappling with significant crime rates. I mean, obviously, if they're doing this stuff on duty or they're taking time to go to train for said dance team, then I could see it being an issue. But other than that, I mean, I don't, if it's a hobby outside of work, I don't see an issue with it. And I think it would be beneficial for them to build community policing relationships. So
definitely.
But moving on, in relation to community policing, we do have a sheriff out of Florida, or Florida as most people call it, that would be quite interesting. It's a Polk County sheriff, Sheriff
Grady Judd, or Jude?
Jude Grady, I believe. He has gone on multiple times, social media, different newscasts, in terms of being a very proactive member of the police force. He goes after crime, very violent crimes and such. I'm sure everybody's seen him on social media and stuff.
So what's cool about him, reading a little bit now, you know, however much you want to trust the internet, but it looks like he's been with the Polk County Sheriff's Office since 1972. He started out as a dispatcher, and he was their first employee to join the sheriff's office under the age of 21. So he wasn't even 21 years old when he started out at the dispatch, central dispatch there, and he just continued up. It looks like at the age of 27, he got the rank of captain, and he's continued upward since there. Looks like in 2004, he was elected sheriff. So, yes, he's been sheriff of Polk County since 2004.
Yeah, so everything that I've seen about this sheriff on the internet, he's always been very proactive. He goes out there, he does mention arrests that are made in the community involving drug or high crime areas. I believe this is also the sheriff that there was an officer involved shooting, or maybe not an officer involved shooting, but there was a bad guy, if you will, that was shot like 54 times or something.
Yeah,
the media had asked, you shot him 54 times, and then his response was, we ran out of bullets.
Yeah, he said, you know, if you hold up a piece of paper, it would be the one that you could see right through. No, definitely very much, he's kind of a no BS kind of guy. Everything that you see online, you know, it's a different style of community policing, because he's putting these videos out there, these media press releases out there. And it is showing the community his enforcement action, kind of putting a word out there to any of these criminals that, hey, if you mess around in Polk County, this is what's going to happen. He doesn't have any respect for you if you're a criminal. He doesn't care about your feelings. I'm pretty sure he's done a few interviews roadside or videos while they have the suspect in custody talking about what they've done. I've seen that. They got a suspect at the back of a patrol car who's swearing at him while he's just, you know, he doesn't care at all. Grady will just keep talking.
So, obviously, the sheriff here, he is kind of referring back to, I would say, most likely pillar four of community policing, community and crime reduction. He's very vocal on the news and stuff about his doings in the community, how he's preventing crime, so forth. Obviously, that's an important part. In addition to that, I think that, well, I mean, not in addition to that, but on the opposite kind of sort of things, the NYPD dance team, I think, would be focusing more on pillar six of community policing, officer wellness and safety. Obviously, both components are important. However, I would say what this Florida sheriff is doing, I mean, obviously, he's been reelected since 2004. So he must be doing something right for him.
20 years of service.
20 years of service as the sheriff.
Yeah.
So he's doing something right, and I think that people can take note of that.
I think he sets a good mindset in the community. Obviously, it's nice, you know, being a resident of his county to see that your sheriff that you have elected or not, but the sheriff who is representing you and enforcing your sheriff's department is not taking any BS. He's out there. They're definitely proactive catching
They're getting drug houses off the streets.
Exactly.
Which is a major, I mean, that's a source of a lot of drug use. So they're getting that off the street. So it's kind of hard to complain. You're right about his tactics or how you will, and as long as he's not being unconstitutional, violating somebody's civil rights or breaking the law, whatever he's doing. I mean, I would say
some people might say he's a little, he can be a little bit strong and come off a little rude, but to be honest with you, you know, it just goes back. It sets that mentality in this community that, no BS, you know, you're going to break a law, you're going to get caught, and you might end up on Facebook or YouTube or whatever news outlet, to all your neighbors and friends and family, all get to see you in cuffs while, Sheriff Grady is just roasting you.
Right. So, and this is all this whole segment here is focused around community policing. I think he's doing a kick-ass job. Like to see it move across the country, to be honest with you, in different jurisdictions and such. We're not dissing anybody's style of community policing. If you'd like to form a dance team or a cheerleading squad, go about it that way. Go ahead. But at the same time, going out there and putting bad guys in cuffs and behind bars and stopping drug houses and advertising that on the news is also a form of community policing. So moving on from that, what do you have for us, Denny?
So another thing we have, like keeping on the same track, community policing, a lot of ways to do it. A big push in community policing is on obviously interacting with the community in a kind of non-enforcement environment, kind of seeing what their problems are, what they need, and helping them find solutions for their problems before they become something that they're calling you about. So in Louisiana, law enforcement agencies are hosting multiple drug take back day events. So if you have, it's multiple different ways that you can go about this. You know, you have criminals who illegally obtain drugs and are planning on misusing them or selling them.
I think that this is more focused on somebody's family member that was prescribed drugs. Yeah, they don't need the drugs anymore. Yeah.
So that way they're not falling into the wrong hands. You know, it's a great way to help your community. Because a lot of people, you know, they don't know. A lot of departments have, you can go right into their office, their station, right there. They're going to have a drop box for you to put any of your expired or unused prescriptions in. But you know, this gets the word out there, allows you to interact with your community. Obviously you're getting those prescriptions, those drugs off the streets before they get into the wrong hands for people who want to potentially misuse them or you know, sell them.
I think the biggest issue would be children in the household.
Yeah, so definitely.
If you have some sort of narcotic lying around and there are kids in the household and there's no reason for that narcotic to be there, we don't want kids to start to get high off of something as simple as Norco or
whatever
might be present in the medicine cabinet.
There's a lot of departments that are doing these, you know, things that you can necessarily do on your own, but it's great when a department decides to make a day event out of it, get it out to their community, because a lot of people, although this resource might be available to them, they're not aware of it. You know, you get people asking all the time, well, I have this, what am I supposed to do with it? I have that.
Flush it down the toilet.
Exactly. It gets information out there.
Get the fish eye.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, good on Louisiana.
Yeah, and this is just something that popped up. I know a lot of departments do this. It's pretty common, I would say, across the U.S. for departments to do this. But moving on from that, I think our biggest topic here in the current events topic that we're going to cover, the Secret Service, God bless them, has their new thing coming out here that they're calling for local law enforcement to, in a sense, either use their current detective agencies or detective bureaus and utilize those resources and point them towards potential school or mass shooters.
Yeah. So big thing with this is it looks like due to the recent climb in these mass shootings that we have going on here, the Secret Service has kind of put out a little statement encouraging local law enforcement agencies to kind of, let's see here, they want them to adopt a behavioral assessment unit.
So I think it's a decent idea. I think that a lot of these mass shootings are caused due to either behavioral or some sort of psychological break in a person. However, across the U.S., I mean, this is a big ask for smaller departments, whether it be sheriff's departments or local municipalities, whatever, to ask local law enforcement to do this and utilize the resources that the federal government has since 9/11. I mean, this is a pretty big ask. I mean, how are you going to get into somebody's internet records or their phone conversations and such without a search warrant?
Exactly. And, you know, I support the idea. Obviously, you know, it is. The big thing they're saying is most of the times before you have a mass tragedy happen, the suspect, the person responsible for it, displays some type of or some type of form of targeted violence or behavior, and it's witnessed by the community and bystanders who maybe even reported it to law enforcement prior to this tragedy happening. The big problem you have there is obviously we'd all like to take a step in and do what we can to get this person the help that we need, that they need to prevent these issues, but there's only so far you can go. You know, criminally, if this person is not doing anything criminal, law enforcement right there, that takes away a lot of our power. It's not criminal, not much we can do. Then you go to the mental aspect, you know, law enforcement, they can petition, but obviously you got three check boxes there and,
yep,
you know, so that's not an end all be all, you know.
So in addition to that, enforcing some type of red flag law or something similar is highly controversial. I don't believe that anything similar has gone to the Supreme Court yet, unless I'm mistaken on that.
I'm not aware. You know, I'm not an expert on any topic whatsoever, especially not this one when it comes to these mass shootings. You know, I don't think I don't think anyone who claims to be an expert on what's going on here is just
but a lot of the liar. Times, a lot of the times for some of these shootings, they're saying, oh, you know, so-and-so exhibited antisocial behavior.
Exactly.
And they went out and did X, Y, and Z, but
and at what point
at what point is that criminal where law enforcement can take action upon that? Or,
and the big thing is you're talking about, you know, yeah, that's, so that's mental health. They're displaying these behaviors, but at what point would that give us the right to then go and violate their rights? You know, it is their constitutional right to have these firearms, and, you know, that can open up a whole nother can of worms with gun control. But at the end of the day, you know, your hands get tied with what is right and what is wrong and the right action without violating someone's rights.
Yeah, I mean, I think at least the recent ones I've observed, the FBI, for some reason, has some sort of, oh, these people were on our watch list, or these people we were monitoring, and the unfortunate events still unfolded. So I think, as in terms of a local law enforcement aspect, we need to focus on people in our communities that might become an issue and then reach out to them and go about it that
way. You know, and I think I can kind of give an example of this. You know, I had a, I had an incident a while back prior to any of these red flag laws being in place. You know, it was out, went to a call for service. This elderly gentleman who's obviously going through, just like we were talking about, he's having some mental issues. He's starting to forget things. People that are no longer around, who have passed, he thinks are still there and with him, and he's having arguments with. His neighbors come and check on him on a day-to-day basis, and one day he just decides, you know, he's going to have his gun with him. Neighbors checking on him. He pulls the gun out and says that, you know, he doesn't know what to do with himself. He's waving the gun around. Neighbor voices concern, saying, hey, be careful. You know, you're waving that gun around. What if it accidentally goes off and, you know, we got kids running around here?
He's playing with the slop in his Glock.
Exactly. You know, it was actually a revolver, but he's, you know, he's not all there. And, you know, of course, he bought that firearm legally and he was the registered owner of that firearm. He's waving it around and she makes a comment, you know, if that goes off on accident and hits a kid, you know, then what are we going to do? And he's like, well, then I guess I just have to take everyone out before I kill myself.
Right.
So obviously we come out there, there's no red flag laws in place. We have to go through the whole nine yards of how we're going to approach, make contact with them. We do eventually make contact with them. Luckily it all went well. We kind of talked to them, but then what are our next steps? You know, are we taking this gun in a criminal aspect of him having it out and making threats with the gun for a felonious assault?
Right.
Or are we going to petition him and move forward with the mental side of things? And we kind of decided to go with both just to prevent the issue from going further. But that's a big thing. At what point are we going to say, hey, he's not in the right state of mind to possess these firearms? How can we as law enforcement say he no longer gets this constitutional right?
Well, he's
got no guardian. He's not declared to not be sound of mind yet. So,
right. And then also
step in.
Building off that, I don't think, I mean, as serious as that case is, I don't think he is our typical.
Exactly. He's not going to be the one out there
for a mass shooting or exactly. something, but he could be. And that's the thing that law enforcement needs to keep in the back of their mind when responding to the situations like you just described or anything else. But I think ultimately going back to this article with the Secret Service, trying to put together this sort of task force, including local law enforcement, if you will, I think it's kind of a reach for them with the amount of resources that they have, asking smaller departments to be in charge of something like this overall. Like I said, obviously, if there's something locally, and that's on the local jurisdiction, if something comes about it, but just monitoring people's behavior and such, I think, is kind of a reach by the Secret Service and what other federal entities are involved with that.
No, exactly. I think a lot of it, you know, it falls on your community. You work as a community, you live as a community. You notice your neighbors having these troubles. You report it, you do what you can. I'm not saying go over there and start an argument with them. You need to give up your guns now, but you know, that you notice a neighbor is struggling maybe with some mental issues, you can always reach out to them before it right. becomes a problem where they're starting to hate the world.
Right. And, you know, it goes back to the community policing aspect that we're trying to discuss here. You need to know what's going on in your community. As a member of that community and also as a law enforcement officer in said community, to make sure that we know what's going on and stuff. Obviously, if something is suspicious, you should report it.
But see something, say something, you know.
Right. So, moving on from that, we were supposed to have a guest speaker today. They had to cancel due to travel and health issues, unfortunately. But we will be moving on here. I think our next topic, Denny has kind of...
Luckily, I was able to find something to talk about instead.
There we go. So he found something that happens all the time. It happens more than most people will think in communities, and that is impersonating the police or law enforcement officers. So, Denny, what do you got?
Well, so to start it off, you know, there's obviously, there's multiple different ways to impersonate law enforcement. There's the guy who maybe worked in corrections, or the guy who did a couple ride-alongs and really wants to be a cop, but for whatever reason hasn't gone the full nine yards.
Or who can't be a cop.
Or can't be for any other reasons.
For a magnitude of reasons.
Exactly. There's that guy who might go out to the bar trying to pick up some ladies saying, hey, you know, I'm the police. And in that sense, you know, that's not going to fall under our quite criminal side of impersonating a law enforcement officer until he starts saying, you know, you're going to be under arrest for drinking that alcohol if you don't go out with me.
That or talking, it could, it depending on how they...
It's in the gray area.
Depending on how they describe
so
themselves.
So you kind of have that, and then you have the people who are full-blown out there trying to pull over vehicles as a civilian and dressed up in a
so
fake
I know
uniform.
One story on this. I know somewhat locally, there was a corrections officer that was unable to become a fully sworn law enforcement officer due to a charge of some sort, assaultive behavior charge. I'm not sure if it was DV, FA, or I think any assaultive charge will disqualify you. But anyways, so this person is disqualified from being a fully sworn law enforcement officer. They somehow got a job in corrections, and this individual took it upon themselves to dress up in essentially their jail attire, and they went out to a local event in their jail attire, and as they were leaving the event, they observed a driver who they thought was quote-unquote drunk. They ended up initiating a fake traffic stop with their personal, you know, personal vehicles. No cherries and berries, nothing like that. And they pulled this person over, and I don't know why you would pull over for somebody just flashing your high beams and a flashlight at you, but this person pulled over, and yeah, I think it's a big liability for the department that they work for. I think that it's a major issue for this person thinking that they have the ability to do this.
Yeah, and I mean, right off the bat, one thing I want to say is, like, not bashing any type of corrections officers at all, you know. Love our correction officers. They do a great job. They deal with the people that I want to get out of my vehicle and out of my presence as fast as possible. I don't want to deal with them all day. So, like I said, love our corrections officers. Obviously, every now and then you get that one person, though, who just wants to go above and beyond and be the hero cop, and they just quite haven't made it there. So yeah, no, in that sense, that's a big liability. That's on the grounds of a lawsuit.
Just for the listeners, this person was relieved of their duties as a corrections officer, and they were not permitted to work in any sort of capacity relating to law enforcement. That's just one story that I can think off the top of my head that comes to mind here.
I don't know if you remember, a while back, it was big news. There was a guy who did funeral processions and escorts, private escorts.
Yes.
He rode a motor.
Yes. Yes.
And he got in a lot of trouble. He had been arrested multiple times. I'll see if I can find the article here as we're going through our other.
Yeah, he was purposely skirting the law of what is legal for, apparently, I think it was in Florida, maybe.
It could have been.
I think it was in Florida, and there's a certain thing that they have set aside for funeral processions and even escort services for said funeral processions that do not include law enforcement. He was not using red and blue lights. I think he was using purple lights, which is commonly used for funerals. And I think that there it is, Jeremy DeWitt.
That it became such a big thing. He's got his own Wikipedia page.
There we go.
Yeah, he's been charged with impersonating a police officer multiple times.
So not only, obviously, with a funeral, you might have some sort of escort, even if it's not law enforcement. And obviously, I think in the state of Michigan, I believe that there's some laws for funeral processions that if the hearse goes through the light, then everybody else in the procession gets to go through the light, something similar to that. But this gentleman was operating a BMW. Motor, and he was operating that with the purple lights, and he was forcing people to pull over as well as threatening them. I think
there's videos. He would wear his own video like body cam or GoPro,
of course. Yeah
And there's videos of him. He'd ride up to people's windows and he's screaming at them, pull over now. And definitely very much so, that's one of those cases of someone who just couldn't quite make the bar of being in law enforcement but wanted to feel power. That would be, in my opinion.
In addition to that, I mean, he's
a bad cop.
Well, he's telling people to pull over. He has no authority to tell them to pull over. And then I think he threatens some sort of, I don't know, I've watched the videos quite a while ago, but I'm pretty sure he threatens some individuals. I mean, he has full gear on, so he's got a gun belt of sorts, a vest, a uniform that if you looked at him quickly, you would say, no, this is a law enforcement officer, and he's not.
Oh, geez. And since 2001, he's built up quite a rap sheet. 2001, impersonating a police officer. 2003, impersonating a police officer. 2005, sexual battery. 2009, breaching parole stipulations. And 2011, he was released. And in 2018, he was charged for failing to register as a sex offender.
I'm pretty sure he went to Chicago. If I'm not mistaken, it's the same guy. He went to Chicago, got into some tussle or tizzy with his wife or girlfriend at the time that would be perceived as domestic violence. And when he was being interviewed by law enforcement, like I said, I think it was Chicago, but I'm pretty sure it was somewhere in Illinois. And he identified himself as a law enforcement officer, almost in an attempt to, like, get out of it. And they were doing what they could to be cool about it with him potentially being a cop. But then they found out that he wasn't a cop. And it was definitely an eye-opener for everybody. I mean, I think he was on the Dr. Phil show, if I'm not mistaken, for being a police impersonator.
It continues from there. I mean, 2019 was his third time of being accused of impersonating a police officer. In 2021, he appeared on Dr. Phil and denied ever impersonating a police officer. And then the next month, he was arrested again for impersonating a police officer.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this isn't somebody that's unintentionally, you know, with his business as a funeral procession escort service, I don't think he's unintentionally impersonating a law enforcement officer.
Oh, yeah.
I think,
I mean,
he's intentionally
an imitation pistol when arrested, so he had the fake gun with him.
Nice. Like a blue gun that you'd use for training.
Possibly, or maybe they're talking like toy gun, an airsoft gun.
Oh, yeah.
Something to where he can act like he's got a sidearm.
It's always good to do one of the Paul Blarts, where you don't have a gun, but you pull up with your offside, and then they think you have a gun.
Yeah, yeah, you have your...
And then you reach for your
gun. Reach,
yeah.
And they think you're going to grab a gun. Yeah, so in 2021, he was then also sentenced for 18 months in jail for driving on a suspended license. 2022, he was released and then arrested again. Released in August, arrested in November for violating his probation, and continues to 2023 and 2024, where he was arrested several times for insurance fraud. Nice. So
this is obviously an extreme example of potentially impersonating a police officer. But there are also more minor examples, I think, that you had pulled up on the sheet there.
Yeah, so we got some minor ones here. Let's see. So we'll start over
and
here.
Obviously, impersonating a police officer, not only is it dangerous for the community because they can, I guess, attempt to enforce laws that either exist or don't exist, but also... I mean, it's very dangerous to pull up on somebody, especially in certain areas, and act as a law enforcement officer if you don't have the capability to do so. I mean, if you pull up on somebody and they just decide that they don't like the police and they're going to start shooting at you, I mean, that's very dangerous for you to attempt this, in addition to the potential risk for the community.
Exactly. So we have this one. In Chicago, this happened back in 2021. A man was standing outside of, a guaranteed rate field after a White Sox game.
Good old White Sox games.
He was in a
always get you.
Fake law enforcement attire. And he was driving. He just won his case, acting as his own lawyer, Robert Illis, or Elise. He had his argument was the law enforcement had no probable cause to stop him and interact with him. Obviously, you know, you see a man in a full Chicago PD police attire, and you work for the Chicago PD. You know, that's obviously a very suspicious situation. So it wants me to pay to read the more of the article. I'm not going to do that, but looking at it, you know, obviously without knowing all the elements of this situation, you have a man who is dressed in a Chicago PD uniform, driving down the road. So was he actively impersonating a police officer? Who knows? Sounds like he was standing outside this White Sox game. Maybe he was acting as security. Whatever he had thought in his mind, but, you know, that's just a case of where someone maybe wasn't doing something as bad. He was maybe liked the attention, maybe wanted people to thank him for his service. So he wanted
half off in Qdoba.
That could very much be what it was. You know, he was looking for those discount White Sox tickets.
There you go.
But yeah, in a more serious note.
So going back to that, I mean, obviously we can see the whole article if we dig deeper, but he sounds kind of more innocent. He's not doing this habitually. It sounds like whoever pulled him over didn't have PC to pull him over.
Well, it looks like
reasonable suspicion. So
he was just posing as a cop outside the field.
So he got off on a technicality.
Exactly.
It sounds like.
I mean, who knows if he was asking to see people's ID or if he was patting people down for weapons. But standing outside, he wasn't trying to pull people over. He wasn't moving people out of the way, trying to do traffic stops on anyone. Sounds like he was just standing outside.
It's just early Halloween for him then.
Exactly. Going back, a more serious note, you know, you have your perpetrators who they're not trying to pull someone over. They're not trying to get that half off of at Qdoba. There are impersonating police officers to commit crimes. So it looks like in Florida.
Wait a minute. You're telling me people are dressing as the police to impersonate the police to commit crimes?
There you go. They're going to commit a crime.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mind is blown right
they
now.
They might be committing a crime. So, in Florida, we have a fake cop forced his way into a hotel room, cuffed a woman, and robs her. So, an armed man posing as a police officer entered a woman's hotel room and physically restrained her and then robbed her. Looks like 27-year-old Michael Rodriguez was arrested in Georgia for driving a vehicle connected to the incident.
Okay.
So, in Florida.
So this
they,
guy,
they didn't
this guy,
catch him in Florida. They caught him in,
well, I mean,
Georgia.
But this guy, he chooses to dress as a cop to get whatever trust that the community still has for law enforcement. He's going to dress as a cop and then proceed to, sounds like, coerce her into a hotel room and then physically restrain her with handcuffs. And then rob her. Is that what I'm gathering?
That's exactly what happens. You know, the woman reported that the man kind of came to her door. He had a police badge and he forced his way in before handcuffing her and robbing her.
Does it say anything about how this was reported? Did she get out of the cuffs?
So it seems like at some point she must have got out. Her hotel room was close to an amusement park, and
what amusement park? It was like Busch Gardens.
It just says not far from Orlando's theme parks.
So either Busch Gardens or maybe Orlando Studios. We'll plug for them here on the podcast.
Sounds like this man, he was wearing a badge around his neck, probably pretending to be a detective, wanting to talk to her. She opens the door, thinking she's safe. He pushes his way in and robs her, and then flees the scene. I love it here. They say, you know, law enforcement investigated. They saw in security footage the man was wearing a badge around his neck that was later found out to be fake. You know, they didn't know right away this cop might have just robbed
you. Nowadays, you can buy whatever. I mean, especially for a somewhat popular police department, you can buy the badges online, which, you know, it's not hard to fake a badge. I'm sure if you went on eBay, you could buy one right now, which obviously is bad. It is a serious offense to impersonate a law enforcement officer alone, let alone going out there and trying to do some sort of enforcement action. There you go. You just pulled it up online. You can buy one for $80.
So, you can go really expensive, and you can do a state of Florida police badge for $225 or some Florida federal badges. There you go. That one looks... community service.
Why would Florida have a federal badge?
That's a good question. You have a Smith and Warren, a lieutenant badge. Here we go.
Yeah. So anything this, that looks like this stuff is online, and it's obviously it's sold as novelty, and it should be perceived as a novelty item if you're some sort of
collector
of sorts. I guess you could go about it that way. But at the same time, these sites are selling these things, and it's just super easy to impersonate law enforcement, which is a bad idea on multiple levels. So, and then, you know, somebody accidentally obtaining this stuff, let's say that they don't even go online. Let's say that they go through maybe a thrift store, or they go through something and they find a badge. Maybe somebody's recently widowed and their husband was a law enforcement officer or vice versa.
So they give it to Goodwill.
So they give it to Goodwill and then they go through it, and Goodwill, when they're sorting through the shit that's given to them, which I'm assuming they don't do the most thorough job, and then they get some sort of patch, or they get some uniform, or they get some badges. And then this individual goes into the store, buys it. Goodwill doesn't give a shit, or whatever resale shop, not just Goodwill, but they don't give a shit about it. And then they sell it. And then you've got somebody that's, either they're in their right mind, they're not in their right mind, they're under the influence of alcohol, narcotics, whatever. They use said uniform, and then they go in, and then they impersonate an officer, and they do this stuff. I mean, it's kind of
bigger yet. I mean, how many stories are there out there of cops losing their badge? You know, you whatever you have to do. You know, I don't know about other people. My badge seems to be pretty thoroughly secured to me when I need it to be. But that's another possibility. You have a officer that somehow just misplaces their badge or
it I just left my badge and my gun in the bathroom stall at Arby's.
Exactly.
You know, it could happen.
And it's gone. And before you know it, you have a crazed man breaking into people's hotel rooms to rob them for their Trump change. There you go.
Building off this impersonating police, there are a lot of, not a lot, but there is a group of people that are out in the community and anybody's community, and they want to, they're big law enforcement supporters, so I give them that. But at the same time, they're also over the top. And when I say over the top, I mean they're over the top with it. They're the ones that are constantly trying to connect themselves to law enforcement.
You talking about the wannabes?
I mean, to a certain extent, yes.
So yeah, you get the tactical guys who, you know, it's the same guys that'll come up to a member of our military service and say, you know, I almost was a Marine, or I was gonna try out for
or
the Army,
or hey, I've done all the defensive tactics that you guys have done, and I can help you guys teach the defensive tactics course at your department.
I did karate in sixth grade, so if you guys ever need help training,
right?
Exactly. You know, you'll see him around. I've ran into it a few times. You got your thin blue line shirt on with your tactical belt, and the
thin blue line shirt always has your name on it.
Side zip combat boots.
The thin blue line shirt always has her name on it.
Oh, exactly.
It says her name, and they are not afraid to come up to you and say, "Hey, I'm qualified in X, Y, and Z."
You know, and at the end of the day, there's not hating on anyone. Support your local law enforcement, definitely. There's definitely just the few people that go over the top. They're not on the line of impersonating, but they're definitely fanboys, which, you know, I guess it's better than them hating us and coming up to try to attack us. But at the same time, you know, some of those people just need to take a chill pill.
Well, also with that level of martial arts or defensive tactics that some of these individuals have gone through, I don't think you want to face them. I mean, you look at this person and you're like, wow, like, I'm glad you're...
I don't know which people you're interacting with. Normally, the ones I look at, you know, there's a lot of them to look at.
Well, there is a lot of them, but also there's the individuals that come up and they're like, hey, like, I'm new to the community, but I've helped.
I'm an ex-felon, but I want to be in law enforcement.
I'm an ex-felon, but I have helped A, B, C, D law enforcement agencies in my home state, and I want to help you guys too. And if I help you guys, you'll be better off.
Though that's the top pick. That's who I want training me. You know, I was previously convicted of assault on a law enforcement officer, but I've changed my ways, and you know, now I want to train you guys in defensive tactics.
To not get assaulted by somebody who would assault a law enforcement officer.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, I mean, it makes sense. It makes sense if you don't think about it.
There's multiple levels to impersonating a police officer. There's the diehard...
The people that go out and they buy the uniforms, the badges on purpose. And then you have the lower levels that are, you know, the wannabes. They'll go out and they have some sort of lights on their 2002 Toyota Camry. And then you've got some other ones that are just goofballing it.
The wannabes, I like to categorize those are the people that are just like, you know, being a cop is cool. I want the attention from that. I want the badge bunnies,
That, and I would say even bigger than that, is the half off at certain places.
That's the whole reason I...
I mean, if You know, a lot of places are desperate right now to hire people. And if you just go out and you go through a police academy, if you can pass a background check and a mental screening, you can become a law enforcement officer. It's not difficult, but the people that don't do it are typically the ones that probably shouldn't.
You know, yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, and just because they can doesn't mean they should. I'd argue that point. You know, there's people out there that they might have passed and they might have became certifiable. Doesn't necessarily mean they should work in a law enforcement capacity.
Yeah, that does happen. But yeah, I mean, you know, I don't really have anything else to say on this.
Yeah, as far as impersonating police officers, that's really all I got for you for that. You know, you either have the people that are trying to break into hotel rooms to rob old ladies, or
they're just trying to look cool outside of a White Sox.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's a full full thing.
But I mean, moving on from that, for people that actually do the job and experience it, we're coming into the fall season. How's that affecting the job? Well, how would you say? We're not winter yet. Okay, go ahead.
I was going to say real quick before we get moving on to the next area of discussion here. We do have a Discord server.
Okay.
The Hogcast, and it is #Hogcast, 2 G's, HOGGCAST. I would encourage, if you have questions, comments, anything, go on there and speak your mind. Let's hear it. I want to get some viewer interaction, or listener, I should say. If you got a topic that needs to be discussed, give it to us. We'll look into it. If you got something that's kind of stupid that you want to ask somebody about, bring it in. But moving on from that, I think what Denny was getting to was the fall activities. Other than
we're not at winter
picking,
yet.
Other than pumpkin picking and pumpkin spice.
I mean, pumpkin spice lattes. That just brings a smile to my face.
That and pumpkin picking. Okay, you can go out and you can pick pumpkins. And trying to see how many P words I can get in here.
The pumpkins. Pausing on that real quick. You know, just going to the job of law enforcement itself. We're not quite into winter yet. Winter is the time, you know, you're going to see those crashes go way up. Everyone sees the first bit of snowfall and they kind of forget which pedal goes where.
They shit their pants.
Exactly.
They shit their pants in panic and then act white.
I don't know
how this happened.
We're out of the summer. You know, I wouldn't say that it's slowed down, but we're out of the summer. So
the slow word, the slow, the quiet, and the calm word.
It's almost like there's someone here who really enjoys saying those three words.
Me personally, I love using all those words because I think it's a superstition. You guys can disagree with me, but
have you noticed a change with the fall coming? A difference in how the job is treating you?
I've noticed that the menus at coffee shops have changed to focus around pumpkin stuff, and I've noticed that the nearby pumpkin patches are getting busy.
So no, there's not a huge change there. Obviously, bigger change is going to be coming in winter here, where we have everyone and their grandmother getting stuck in ditches. You know, it's kind of weird. You can work a 12-hour shift and not have a single crash, but people who hop on the road for 20 minutes find their way into a ditch. It's I guess it must be the talk of the town. This ditch is the one to hang out in.
Well, I mean, you get out there and you see a bunch of cars hanging out in a ditch.
You want to join them.
The first thing that comes to my mind is, hey, that seems like a fun ditch to be a part of. Let's see what we can do to get into that ditch.
We're all going to party. I would say there is one thing, you know, that comes with fall. You got the hunting. You got the deer, the rut. I'd say the rut started early this year.
So, okay. So I personally...
Hard deer accidents.
For the listeners there, I am personally not a big hunter. You know, whatever happens. I'm more for one. Was smoking one with my truck, but Denny here has gone out and you've sat in the woods for hours to kill a mammal.
I've sat in the woods for hours just to see that one deer come and stare into my eyes and beg me not to shoot it.
And then miss a shot.
And then I, surprisingly, I've never missed a shot on a deer.
That's because you haven't taken one then.
You think I'm lying? I haven't. Well, maybe that's not true.
So, obviously, we do like to, on the show, talk about ways to decompress. I know a lot of cops or law enforcement officers or people related to this field do go out and hunt this time of year. Denny, let's hear what you got. Any recommendations, anything to stay away from? I would say probably, and I'm not a hunter, so tell me if I'm wrong, taking a pumpkin spice latte out to your deer blind might be a bad idea.
So you'd be surprised. So there's actually, you know, I'm not going to get into it. Like I said before, I'm not an expert on any topic whatsoever. There you have the old man style who, I go out into the woods and light a fire at the bottom of a tree and just kind of sit there with the campfire until a deer shows up. There's the people out there that believe that no matter what you do, if an animal's going to walk by, they're going to walk by. It doesn't matter if you're smoking a pipe or having a fire or drinking your pumpkin spice latte. You just do what you're doing in the woods and wait for them to show up. There's the other people that believe that you need to go 20 feet up in a tree.
You need to put all camo. 20 feet up in the tree.
Have a deer piss on you.
I was going to say, put the female doe piss. Just coat yourself in it. Before you go out, don't even take a shower. Just have the natural musk of yourself and then just coat yourself.
Well, that's where you're wrong. You have to take a scent lock shower. So they're scent lock soap. Now, so I'm not, like I said, I'm talking shit. Scent lock soap, it locks out any bad scents. And then you put the deer urine on.
Now, when you're coating yourself with the deer
piss. And then there's scent lock deodorant, too.
Are you fully engulfed or fully immersed in the deer piss?
I'm
going to
be honest with you. I don't really use deer piss. I go out. I'm kind of what you would call a lazy hunter. I go out maybe 3 times a year. Sometimes more, sometimes less. Depends on how busy I am with work and personal life. I go out a few times. I usually get pretty lucky to where the first time I go out, there's a deer. I guess I have a pretty fortunate hunting property.
Or you're just a shitty shot.
Well.
Or both. But you don't coat yourself.
There's been one time that I've gone out where I think it was a year I really wanted to get a nice buck, and I had gotten a doe. I'm going out. I bought some urine beforehand. They come with the little cotton sticks.
There's farms for deer piss.
Yes.
Okay, so you get the deer piss in a jar
and a little
it's
bottle.
Legit deer piss. It's not synthetically made. It's not made in a lab. It is legit deer piss.
And you get these little cotton sticks. They have a loop on the end.
Be honest with me. Have you tasted it?
Never. No. That's not something.
Are you sure?
You ever smell ammonia, like smelling salts?
Yeah, or urea?
That's what it is. It smells like it's horrible.
So it smells like piss, and you're rubbing that on your clothes.
No. So they come with little cotton dips, and you put a couple drops of this urine on there.
You put it in your shoe, and then you use the infected toe. I'm curious to what you do with the cotton swabs. I'm sorry, I'll let you finish.
You hang it on a stick, and it's just to draw in the bucks during the rut. You know, they smell that, and, you know, what does urine associate with other than private parts?
So they get horned up for the deer piss. They smell that. They smell that deer piss, and they're like, fuck, we got a baddie around here.
Anyway, pretty much. That's the essence behind it. Like I said, I'm not an expert. Anyone who loves to hunt and goes out more than 4 to 5, maybe 6 times a year has me beat in any type of knowledge. I go out. I'm a lazy hunter. I go out a few times. I don't care about the scent locking. I wash the stuff with scent lock soap. Besides that, I'm not taking a scent lock shower. I'm not putting on the scent lock deodorant.
The deer don't like Dawn dish soap or Dawn. I'm sorry, Tide Pods. They don't like Tide Pods.
There's big arguments between what they actually care about and what they don't. And I have no idea. I just go out
there. Our next guest, we were going to have a guest today, but it got canceled. We should have a deer in the studio and ask the deer, hey, what do you come to?
That's a multi-staged question.
Well, what scent are you attracted to as a deer? And then, they go on there. What noise does deer make? Can you get honestly, that?
So my thing is, I used to do a lot of bow hunting. Going back to keeping it a little bit law enforcement based, I used to do some bow hunting. I find it harder to get out. I usually do a little more prep for bow hunting. I definitely would like to take my bow out a lot more before I'm going to take it in a hunting environment. So now I'm a lazy hunter. I wait for the opening day of rifle season, and that's when I kind of start my hunting. There's early rifle. There's all that. I don't usually start hunting till November now. I'm lazy. I don't find the time to get out there.
So, because you don't go hunting, do you do anything else? Right now, driving down the roads, especially country roads. I know some of the listeners are listening from the freeway corridors that are, across the country. Southern Sudan. But I know a lot of people are listening from areas where there are country roads and the colors are changing. You get all sorts of reds, oranges, yellows, blah, blah, blah. What else do you do in nature? Me personally, one of my favorite things to do is go pumpkin picking and get some apple cider and donuts. That right now, that is
apple cider and donuts or apple cider donuts?
Both.
See, there you go. Personally, I really enjoy a little bit of pyromaniac in me. I enjoy fires. So I just go in the middle of a woods and start a fire.
So you're an arsonist.
No, I like to go out in a controlled fire pit, chopping wood. I just love fall. There's a brisk. I can finally start to wear flannels or sweatshirts without sweating my nuts off. So fall time is the perfect time for outdoor activities because you get that cool breeze moving and I can actually function outside.
What do you plan on dressing for Halloween?
Well, now we're jumping around. So,
well, I mean, it's the same season. We're more than halfway through the month. I think we're at the filming of this, we're 10, 11 days from Halloween. What are you dressing up as? Me personally, I'm thinking about dressing up as a fireman.
Yeah, I always wanted to be a real hero.
I always wanted to be a real hero.
Someone that people respect.
Exactly. Care about. So I'm thinking a fireman.
I was, that's a tough question. There's a lot of things that have gone back and forth between. Have you ever seen Brokeback Mountain?
The what?
Brokeback Mountain.
I can't say that I have, but it seems like you have a past experience on this.
I was going to find a good friend and maybe do that costume idea. Who knows? Maybe a little bit of Step Brothers. Maybe some 21 Jump Street. Maybe, who knows, Dumb and Dumber. The possibilities are endless. I could dress up as something scary, like right. A reserves officer
like
with chlamydia. A gun.
Like chlamydia. okay, moving on from that. Last thing that we're going to cover here. Obviously, we talked about hunting, so this kind of blends into that, is shooting.
Each other?
No, not quite. Shooting, obviously, a lot of people find that relaxing.
I love shooting.
And they do it as a sport. It is.
We're talking about like shooting up.
Yeah, we're talking about shooting up, like black tar heroin, the good shit. No, but in actuality, shooting, it is, to some people, relaxing. It has become a very expensive hobby.
Oh, good.
Not only do you have the, what I would consider as a business person, the sunk cost of guns and equipment, but also ammo has gone through the roof with the current political landscape that we're facing. I would say that shooting, the best way, if you're super into it, I would say would be reloading. Do you have any experience in that?
I do not. I know quite a few people who are heavy into reloading. Well, not quite a few people who are heavy into reloading. That's when you get all particular with what type of powder solutions, where you're using the amounts. I know a lot of people who are into long range shooting are typically the ones who are loading their own rounds, because that's when you get into the more sport side. You want to be very particular with the grain of your bullet on top of the powder you're using, and how much affecting the velocity and how far the bullet's going to travel. A lot of people who are into competitive long range shooting load their own ammunition for certain specific ranges and accuracy. It's all experience, and that's a hobby. You know, you can load ammo for an hour.
I think you're saving loading money. Loading ammo itself, not only are you saving money, but you're also, it's a secondary hobby to shooting. And even if you're shooting, I mean, even if you're shooting, you know, something common like 9mm, 22, 40 cal, 45, whatever, I think it's important there because it's a hobby. But then also you have these individuals, God bless them, they go out and they shoot. I mean, 6.5 Creedmoor.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an expensive round.
Oh,
or a 458 Bushmaster.
Everything's getting expensive now. You know, you want to shoot even, you know, you're going out, you want to shoot a decent amount, get some actual legitimate training in with live rounds. You're looking at a $300-$400 day if you're doing an AR and a handgun. Easily, you could be looking at just that as a baseline if you want to get in a decent amount of training. I mean, that's why sometimes I enjoy shooting. Obviously, before you go hunting, you're going to take your rifle out. You're going to make sure that it's, you know, sighted in. It's where you need it. Everything's adjusted to your liking. Get some rounds downrange. I enjoy that. You're shooting less. I don't have a semi-automatic bolt-action rifle. Taking my time, not spending as much money on ammunition, but at the same time, you're going from buying a box of 20 rounds of 5.56 for $12 to $14 to now you're buying a 20 count or even a 10 count of 308 or 6.5 for exponentially more. I mean, I haven't bought a box in a while, so I couldn't tell you the exact price right now, but a lot more expensive.
Yeah, I mean,
but it's a great way. You're out in nature, especially around this time. Going back to the, you know, decompressing. You're out. You're in nature. You're getting the fresh air that you need. I'm not sweating my nuts off because it's finally fall and it's starting to cool down. Unlike today, where it's 75, but you're out there. You're shooting. You're having a good time. And you're just taking in some nature, decompressing from a day. And at the same time, you're training. You're getting better. So.
Yeah, I mean, if you have an expensive round and you save the casings, that'll save you some money.
It could. I mean, I'd like to get into loading here. That might be something, might be a hobby I pick up. I just, you know, I don't know anything about it, never done it, but seems interesting and could be something that I could get into.
Yep. With that, we're going to wrap up the show here. Denny, you have anything else important to say?
I don't think so. You know, like we talked about, don't impersonate police officers.
Get involved in community policing. You know, if you are a law enforcement officer,
exactly.
Decompressing. Obviously, we're always looking for new ways to move forward with that. I think it's important that law enforcement take some time to get out of the job, if you will. In terms of the Hogcast, we did have a special guest today, but we'll get them on here soon enough. We do have some fun topics that we're going to discuss. We're going to talk about canine work, interdiction, promoting in agencies. We do have guests scheduled. I'm not sure what the exact schedule looks like, so we're going to be moving on from there. Other than that, Denny, if you don't have anything, I'm going to sign off here.
I'm all set. Just keep on keeping on.
Keep on hogging. We'll see you guys next time. Thank you.